Hey, folks, and welcome to the Deconstructor of Fun podcast. I'm your host, Mishka Katkov, and in this episode, I'm joined by Sola Savulenko. Sola is the CMO of Pixonic Studio, which is part of My Games. Now, in this episode, Sola and myself will be talking about the intricacies of building a successful game franchise. Topics like the balance between organic growth and strategic planning, the evolution of games into franchises, the challenges of transitioning from a hit game into a franchise, the importance of passion and creativity in brand building, as well as the potential for expanding the franchise into various media formats. Now, we all know that after the privacy changes, IPs have become monumentally more important. There's many companies who are borrowing or paying to use an external IP in their games or building games around an external IP. And in this episode, we kind of delve deeper into what if you have a successful game, a game that has been played for almost a decade, that has hundreds of millions installs, just like Pixonic Studio with their War Robots. And can you build a franchise, a brand around that, and build more games with the same IP rather than acquiring or lending or renting an IP from somewhere else? Pixonic has been doing that. They've launched several new titles with the War Robots IP, one on PC console, one on mobile with a more accessible, different type of gameplay. So we'll be talking about those and overall the topic of brands and franchises. So hope you enjoy this podcast, and please do leave a comment. Connect with myself or Sola, and subscribe to our newsletter. Our newsletter has all this and much more fun. So anyways, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Sola Savulenko. Welcome to the Deconstructor of Fun podcast. I'm your host, Mishka Katkov, and today I have a super interesting guest, Sola Savulenko from My Games and from Pixonic, and we're going to talk about cross-platform franchises. Sola, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Hello, everyone.
So let's start with talking about you. You are the CMO of Pixonic, and Pixonic is known for the War Robots, which is now a franchise. So the first title, super successful. War Robots on mobile, and now it's on different platforms. It's been launched in different countries. I think it's close to 10 years, crossed at least $500 million in revenue, seems to be growing, seems to be still entering new markets. And then as of late, you've been launching Little Big Robots, which is a more casual game, and War Robots Frontiers, which is a PC game. But before we go into how you expand to different audiences and different platforms, you've been a CMO of Pixonic, and before that, you were at Game Insight in marketing. And can you a little bit talk about your career as a marketer?
Oh yeah, I'm actually a gamer, and I do like games since my childhood. But when I was really like a small child, I didn't think that actually this could be a job for someone, and but still like. At the end of 2002, I joined a team in my native city who developed PC games. So, and that was actually the point when I entered the game industry. It was not the mobile game that time, but still it was gaming industry. And I was like a PR manager. So, and actually all of the things I learned was not because of some institute, university, and so on, just or only it was the experience, because we were like the pioneers in each and every step. And I did have a short break, tired, but then when I returned, I actually returned already into mobile game industry. It was the sunrise of this era, and it was firstly, it was Crazy Panda Games, then it was Game Insight for 3 years. And in February 2021, I joined My Games. I joined our Pixonic team. As I said, firstly, it was only PR strategies, mm-hmm. communications with journalists when we were trying to present our games, when, you know, I was
writing
these emails to everyone like, oh, please see our screenshots and our demo version, something like that. And of course, it was really very interesting when this mobile era began, because actually it was a golden era. And especially when you see all of these numbers right in time, and mm-hmm. especially, I mean, when you spend the money and right away you see the result of this spending. And what I'm a big fan is that actually the mobile games are not, we are more flexible. I mean that, for example, when you are developing some AAA title, mm-hmm. you still have to see the result. And in mobile games, you can, you know, see just right away. For me, it is really, really very important. So yeah, it's like a few words about my career.
The games industry is experiencing unprecedented growth, with global revenues projected to reach a staggering $268 billion by 2025. But with more players than ever connecting across platforms and devices, how can your game stand out against the competition? AppsFlyer has created AppsFlyer for Games to help you unlock your players' true LTV by providing a wealth of game measurement solutions, unique industry insights, and proven best practices. Our dedicated hub is packed with innovative products, industry partnerships, and unrivaled expertise to ensure your game brand adapts and thrives. We understand that every game is unique, and AppsFlyer's data-driven insights allow us to cater to your specific needs. We know that in today's evolving landscape, staying ahead of the curve is crucial. Trust in AppsFlyer for Games to guide you through this exciting journey. We have the tools, the knowledge, and the passion to help you succeed in this ever-expanding landscape. Together, we'll conquer new worlds, both real and fantasy, break records, and create gaming experiences that leave a lasting impact. Get in touch with AppsFlyer for Games today and unleash your game's true potential. AppsFlyer for Games, supercharging the gaming landscape. Hey game devs, are you tired of dealing with complicated payment processes all over the world? Well, Exola's got your back with Exola PayStation. It has a simple, user-friendly interface that makes it easy for players to pay for your games and in-game content however they want. And because the Exola PayStation user interface is adaptive and accessible on smartphones, tablets, and PCs, your players will have a seamless experience no matter their preferred device. Players can save their favorite payment methods for future purchases, and on mobile, even charge purchases directly to their phone carrier bill. On the back end, you can customize your checkout with game-specific integration options like sidebars and iframes, as well as change colors, fonts, and images to make PayStation look and feel like a natural part of your game. Ready to see Exola's PayStation in action? Visit exola.pro/payments-dof or visit the link in this podcast description.
Yeah.
So you've been career from communications to management to marketing, and now chief marketing officer at Pixonic. And I'm curious mm-hmm. to understand, what does your team look like? Like, what are you in your team? Because Pixonic is cross-platform. You have games on PC, you have games on console, you have games going in on mobile. What does your team look like? And
so actually, everything we need, we have inside. And for us, it's very, very convenient. So but still, we have our central services where we can go if we do not have the needed experience, the needed expertise. Yeah.
Understood. So what does your marketing team look like? I'm very curious because, mm-hmm. again, because you will have multi-platform approach. Uh-huh. What does a marketing team for that approach look like?
Well, it divided into, of course, user acquisition team. And it's not very big. I mean, our in-house structure, it's, I suppose, 6 people. Guys, if you hear me and if I'm wrong, please forgive me. You know that I forget a lot of things. So it's on the performance marketing team. It is we divided the sources between people. But actually, we are free if we want to try something new, because I do understand when you are working with only one title for quite a long time on the same source, it became boring and you just say, hello, it was really very nice to meet you, but I will go and join some other team. So yeah, we are trying, you know, to mix it somehow. Then we have our creative production team. It's quite big because we need a lot of creatives for our user acquisition campaigns. And we also have actually insights team, in-house team. And we also have for the central marketing creative production team. And well, without them, it will be really very difficult to get the necessary quantity of the videos. And we also have our creative producers. These guys, they're like searching through the internet. They're looking for the trends. They are watching all of the reports from Sensor Tower, Data AI, AppMagic, and so on and so on, just to see what the trends are, what our competitors do. And they also watch a lot of videos, I mean, through Facebook, Instagram, and so on, through TikTok, because we have to find some new concepts in order to run our campaigns more successfully. We also have PR team, which is responsible for all of the communications internally, and they also work very closely with central PR team of My Games, because we actually have to be on the same line. And there is also in my marketing team a part which we call growth team. Actually, these persons are responsible for all of the questions in terms of organic traffic. So it's all about these Apple search ads campaigns, about live ops cards in Google Play, and so on and so on. But also guys from growth team, they are also responsible for testing our new products, because our R&D R&D team, which we also have in our studio, they're presenting the new builds which they want to test, and we run the campaigns. So it is also in hands of marketing team. So it's all my guys. I hope I didn't forget anyone. I think that's all. Yes, about exactly marketing. And still, just because we have a big marketing campaigns on big sources, we are searching for the new sources of traffic. And sometimes it's more convenient to ask for help for central marketing, because they already have some tests with that or that ad network or DSP or something like that. And we just can ask them, like, guys, please help us to run this test exactly on Warovitz. And when we see the results and the results are okay, we will run this with all of the money we have. And when you say that we have this like cross-platform, that we have our Steam version of Warovitz and our PC version, of course, we're also trying to buy traffic for these platforms. But definitely, it is still challenging to do this on Steam. But we never give up, and I hope that someday we'll do this as good as we always do with on another platform. And we're thinking, like, we are still searching for the best way how to scale our marketing spend for our PC version. Of course, there are some difficulties, but like we are on our way to success with that.
Yeah, that's so it's really interesting when you're explaining your marketing team, because just to understand how it looks like for a product and a franchise that has been out there for a very long time, so you must have insane amount of different types of creatives that you can use from the past like almost 8 years. And now because you're on so many different platforms, because normally we think about like, well, what kind of strategy we use on TikTok, what kind of strategy we use on Instagram and Facebook and so forth. But now you're going also in the PC world. And it's very interesting that you mention that advertising, so running campaigns, like after all the experience on mobile, PC is actually quite challenging. And I think that's very important for people to hear in the mobile gaming industry, because a lot of startups are thinking that they're going to go to PC. It's going to be a lot easier, and it's not going to be as difficult because of all the privacy changes that happened on iOS and all the Google sandbox changes that are incoming. It's like, let's go on PC. But you're saying that No, PC is its own beast. It's very challenging. And despite all this history of really like understanding your audience, understanding your game, having all these creative assets, having a central marketing team, having a robust internal marketing team, you're still like learning and trying to conquer the PC marketing aspect.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And I want to say to all of the listeners that actually there won't be any easy time for us anymore. And I think that it is on the same level. I mean, there's difficulties with PC and also with mobile traffic, because we all know about IDFA apocalypse, as we call it in my games, that you have to, you know, like find your potential player, and it costs a lot. And when we are talking about PC version, it is still very important to show the user that you're actually, it is not a fake, some fake landing, for example, that this user should somehow trust your the advertisement that he saw. And the funnel is a bit different than in when you just see in Facebook and you click and then you're on the App Store and you already trust to all of these platforms. I mean, you are trusting Facebook or I don't know, some Google, YouTube channel and so on. And then you're getting into the store, App Store or Google Play Store, and you also trust this platform. But when you're trying to lead your potential player somewhere on the website, it's really very tricky. So you have to somehow tell him, like, don't worry, please download and have some fun.
With the robots. Thing before we start talking more in details about robots is, like, mm-hmm. something interesting that my game CEO said, Elena said that, after... I'm just paraphrasing, but basically mm-hmm. what she was saying is that with the prior years of us being able to target users effectively, now we have to learn how to make games for mass audiences again. Do you feel that's happening with you as well?
Well, I'm not sure that it is just happening right now and exactly with war robots, because we already have our core audience and we know how to work with this audience. And by the way, we're still able to find the new audience, which is satisfied with exactly this game. But I totally agree with Elena's thought about these games, which should be more friendly for more wider audience. And I hope that we will, just because we are trying to find a new hit, and we have our little big robots. So just right now, it is still in the process of finding the best way of how to operate this game. And maybe it will be also our way of, launch this game into the stars.
Yeah. Let's talk about, so you mentioned audiences, and this is an interesting topic because I think we had developers from War Robots when the game crossed 500 million. A couple mm-hmm. of years ago, they were on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And the interesting story was about the early phases of War Robots. When the game launched, in soft launch, it had appalling KPIs. So I forget what the retention numbers looked like, but I think it was like lower than 20% D1, something like that, which is like a death blow for anything. And then yet you are in a situation currently where... the game is, I mean, it's performed phenomenally. It's still growing in certain markets. Mm-hmm. And now it's being, you know, grown through new franchises on two new platforms. So I'm kind of curious in like two things. Like, how were you able to, I know that this was a little bit before your time, I think. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. most likely the learnings have been shared. Like, how were you able to go past the first stage of really identifying the audience and then starting to grow? And how have you been able to sustain the growth throughout, you know, almost a decade?
Well, this is a very good question. And what I want to say that when War Robots were launched. I suppose it was 2014, something like that. I don't remember the exact year. And I was working in another company, definitely. But we in the industry, we were very like happy for this success. And we were, you know, observe the progress of the games, how they develop. And we do remember all of these, you know, mark points like Apple presentation and something like this. So War Robots always were some like masterpiece. But also you mentioned that at the very beginning, the main metrics were dramatically low. And definitely if we see such metrics just for our new projects right now, we will not launch it because the situation actually changed. And back then, at the very beginning, you can actually launch whatever you want because the market was pretty empty. And I think that the most difficult then it was not only to launch, but understand how you can develop this game, which is launched already. And I think that the team of War Robots, they did a great job. And the reason for that, I think that what I can see from my perspective is that product team works really very closely with marketing team. We have really very strong analyst team, and I want to send them love just right now. And we always do understand our business goals. So we are trying to balancing between doing a great game and still understand what we need to actually have the resources to do this game even better and greater. So I think this is really a symbiosis of very strong teams. I believe that that professionals, they are very important if you want to create something big. And when they, even now, for example, when we launched in marketing, we launched, I think it was 2 years ago, our first campaigns on TikTok, for example. I was a bit worried because this platform is for younger audience, blah, 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 and how this audience will feel in our game, which is more for, you know, male under 32, something like that. But still, you know, the product team, they learned how to onboard these newcomers because we do understand that not only we are developing, but also the potential audience is developing, that maybe they need, I don't know, more different offers, or maybe they want to have some, you know, brighter colors on some skins and so on. So we are always thinking about what our audience may have need, and we always watching for our competitors, because actually a lot of games which are really very cool, and we are like decomposing them and take the best from them. So yeah, something like this, I suppose, that helps us to operate this title for quite a long time.
Yeah, so combination of like really working together with the product,
yeah,
marketing,
yeah,
and analysts,
yeah,
working closely together.
Yes, analyst, product team, and marketing. And it's all connected by business goals. Perfect match.
Yeah, under business goals.
This episode is brought to you by Data AI. Yes, they were called App Annie back in the day, but let's not talk about that. Let's talk about how Data AI is the first company to combine consumer and market data with the power of artificial intelligence. And Data AI does this to unlock unique consumer and market insight to accelerate competitive advantages across all digital channels worldwide. What we here at Deconstructor Fun really like is Data AI's Game IQ tool. It's this fantastic market and competitive intelligence tool for mobile gaming that allows publishers to really get to the feature level of a game without doing the full-on deconstructing first. Using this tool, your team can quickly tie features to performance KPIs, which will help you make difficult roadmap decisions. It's also a great tool to identify hidden growth opportunities as you can analyze games on a scale. As you well know, there are hundreds of thousands of gaming apps in the App Store and thousands of new mobile games released each month. And while we don't want you to stop reading and listening to Deconstructor Fun, the fact is we can't cover it all. With Date AI, and especially their Game IQ tool, you'll be able to efficiently determine what features provide a lift, make roadmap decisions based on accurately modeled expected outcomes, discover how competitors lifted performance through feature releases, benchmark performance against your competitors, focus with confidence on the highest potential genre for a new game release. We here at Deconstructor Fun are huge fans of Data AI. So what are you waiting for? Go to Data AI and try the service for free. I wanted to talk to you about Heroic Labs. Building a successful game is hard enough without worrying about building your own game tech as well. Heroic Labs provides a comprehensive game stack to help you get your game into market faster and scale beyond the competition. With their Unity game framework Hero, you can cut development and prototyping time in half and quickly add social, economy, and reward systems to grow your game. Satori, the LiveOps platform built specifically for the games industry, lets you run live events, A/B tests, deliver dynamic content to players, and always keep your game growing. Nakama, the industry's leading open source game server, lets you develop locally, providing all social and competitive features for your game, and then seamlessly transition to their Heroic Cloud hosted service and easily scale to meet the largest of audience demands. Find out how to get started at heroiclabs.com.
And how about, actually, I'm curious about, because you said, you know, the profiles of male, of certain, and how to cater to them, both on terms of marketing and product side. I'm curious if you use any kind of specific tools, or is it that in-house user research that gives you the insight into those users?
Well, yes, we always do some kind of surveys, and this is our community team is responsible for that. And I hope that we will also do this with the bigger platforms like Google, for example, because they have the tool, like the exact tool, when you actually can ask the potential audience or the audience which has already played your game, whatever you want. But still, for us, it is very important to understand the needs of our existing audience. So yeah, quite often we run the surveys, especially after the updates. We work closely with the support team because actually this is the front line, and they have these guys there, like also my hugs and kisses for them, because they are the first one who gets these comments, which are not always with love, because love is silence, silent. Yeah, and we gather all of this information, we do the analysis, and we are trying to rework it and to implement really important things into, I don't know, next or build after the next one because of our big backlog. But yeah, we are listening to our audience. I think it's very important because our game is also our audience.
Of course, understand. And it's, you know, being in development, I understand it's easier and, I don't know, more fun to develop against certain profiles than against mass of numbers. Like I don't know if you use those sort of a user research profiles where you have, you know, bucketed at certain types of users. Is that the type of approach you use user research, or is it more like just overall data?
No, not overall data, because we are really, is it still like allowed to say this, like data-driven company? And we always trying to look from different angles to the audience. And because it's more useful. If you just took the white piece of data, maybe you will not find the answers you want. But when you divide it, sometimes you can pick exactly what you were looking for. So yeah, we're trying to do and use all of the tools which we have, and all of the internal tools and external, because for example, it is this instrument Insights Finder by Google, and you actually can see, for example, which are the interests on YouTube for your audience, for example, in United States or any other country. And just because you are searching for that, you start to understand, and maybe you will also implement this information somehow into your creative strategy or into the strategy of your community. So yeah, we are always trying to gather as more information as possible legally. I want to underline this.
Under privacy, under the privacy restriction.
IDFA, it cut our wings a bit, but I can say that, for example, we were brave enough not to cut off our marketing spend, our marketing budget after April 2021, when IDFA was turned off. And I think it was really very good decision. I mean, overall, my games, not only in Pixonic, because a lot of advertisers, they just leave the auction and it was free for us. And we created some workarounds inside to learn more about the users, how to optimize our campaigns. So yeah, we are good, but of course, it was a bit easier before.
Yeah, for sure. And can you talk about some of the sort of a pivotal, not maybe, I don't know if pivotal is the right word, but kind of like interesting moments during the time and from a marketing perspective, especially since you are spending so much time understanding the users better, using the Google Insights tools. It's like, what kind of a results have you been getting from there and implementing knowledge from those tools and then implementing that knowledge into your marketing campaigns, finding like successful ways to market to the audience?
Well, first, which came into my mind is actually not about the exact campaigns, but about the creatives. Because as I said, our creative producers, they are searching for the trends. And we found several concepts for, we call it like meta mislead. It's not a mislead exactly, but still there are some details which are not exactly in the game. But we even think about this mechanic could be included into the game because it's very, very looking very organically, yes, if I may say so. And regarding the trends, for example, in Google, in Insights Finder, unfortunately, just right away, I'm not able to remember the example, the good example. So maybe if it turn into my mind later, yeah. I will get back to this. Sorry.
I put you on the spot. There's so many campaigns that you guys run, so no wonder. So a lot of questions, but kind of going to the original question of this franchise. So having multiple games under the second one, can you talk a little bit about Little Big Robots? Like, how did this project came to be?
Yes. Well, first of all, I want to say that me personally, I do like this game a lot. And I play a lot. And this is actually an answer for your question, like how this game appeared inside our team. Because this big love for robots is actually the main reason why we were deciding to do something like Little Big Robots. And of course, I mean that... we do want to try ourselves on the field of top-down shooters. And we still have experience in shooter, definitely. And just because all of the team, I mean all of the team, not only marketing, not only the product team, but even the financial team, we just adore our robots. So for us, it was very natural that we decided that the character of this game would be small robots, which are more... how to say this correctly, which are more for exactly for wide audience, and it's cartoonish and very funny, and we decided that it would be really very nice if we can actually take some abilities or behavior or weapons from the big robots and just make them a little more funnier and implement into the new genre, but with the same characters which we really love. So I do understand that I sound a bit like, you know, this very happy esoteric person. Oh my God, love is everything. But this is true because all of our team, we are very fond of our main robots and we want to put them wherever we can. So this was actually the first reason. But still, I want to say that business is business, yes, but our games should be really great. So we have to, how to say this, if someone inside the team has the concept of the game, which is could be not only, you know, the game of his dream, but also can definitely earn some money, we will always try to, make the first build and to test it and so on. And when we see the good metrics, we are ready to continue development. So this was how the little big robots appeared. So it was not like, you know, we were sitting in the meeting room and decided like, okay, so what will be our next big thing? Oh, let's create something like this. No, it was very, very, very natural inside the team because we have a lot of like game jams and a lot of brainstorms. And then, you know, it was only two people, then three people, then they code something, then they show something. And then we understand it. Actually, this could be our potential hit game. So we decided to continue development. And after that, when we've gathered the first metrics, we understand that, okay, let's focus on that.
Do you use any kind of, do you look at any kind of audience affinity? And of course, I understand mm-hmm. that games come up organically, they have business potential, mm-hmm. they have excitement around them, mm-hmm. and they get there. But how about the audience? Because knowing War Robot's audience so well, it was the goal with Little Big Robots, which is, you know, it's a top-down version, and the first mm-hmm. one is a third-person shooter version. So is the goal to kind of expand to a more casual, not even casual, but younger audience? Seems like it's a...
Yeah, not casual, but yes, not casual, but younger. I mean that for us, it was also the way, and it is also the way of diversification, because it will be impossible to gather all of the audience inside only one game. And we have these young people who actually can be also our core audience, but not in the War Robots Mobile. So we have to suggest them something. And for us, it's the way of getting the new audience into the game and to make our portfolio not focused only on the one piece of audience. I mean, this male under 32 and further.
Understood. And so the game hasn't yet, I mean, found the growth that you're probably expecting. It took War Robots mm-hmm. a lot of time as well. Like, how do you approach launching, like soft launching and launching and growing a game post 21, post iOS mm-hmm. 15, basically?
Mm-hmm. I personally do not believe in this soft launch strategy like it was before, when you just choose the country, and most of the time it was Canada, and you were gathering all of the metrics and show how it's going on, and then you decided to go worldwide. What I believe is that we all understand that, for example, our main market is United States, so we have to test our game on the audience, which will be really very useful for us in the future. I think that we were open to, for the whole world. I don't remember the exact date, but at the beginning of 2023, yes. And we decided, because the game was on that stage when you are not embarrassed of it. And when actually there was enough content to play for several weeks, I suppose. And we have to run this test with marketing campaigns, with like what we call sustained marketing campaigns, which were going every day with some kind of optimization, without optimization, just to check our progress between build over build. And so this was our strategy, because we decided to spend money on traffic just for this whole year, because without this data, you will be not able to tune the game inside of it. So we are still like gathering this data. And you say that we're not yet found our growth, but I hope that this year of testing will be enough for us to understand everything which we actually wanted and to make this construction better.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you launched directly right into the US. Mm-hmm. And you didn't believe in the previous, you know, kind of like a, mm-hmm. almost like a Supercell playbook of the past. Yeah, no, Supercell doesn't use it either. Now they also go directly on Android mm-hmm. in the US and so forth. So, what do you tell to companies that are still baffled by starting a soft launch in the core market? I mean, mm-hmm. Volvo has done it for, I don't know, past 5 years. They always started in the US, and people were like, "What are you doing? You're destroying your golden cohort, you're doing this, you're doing that." And so, like, what would you say to people who don't believe in this strategy of going to the primary market right away?
Well, I want to say, suggest them to be more flexible and to be more in line with our new reality, actually, that you actually can't just waste your time buying users, for example, in those countries which will not be your focus for the next, I don't know, 3 years. So for me, it's a common sense. We have to understand how exactly these people will behave in our game, which is good for them, which is not, when they are satisfied and when they are not. We want to get the reviews from them. We want our support to communicate with them. And we want to, the direct response from the people which are at that very moment is very useful for us. Because if we succeed exactly on this market, then it will be okay for any other. Of course, we will, I don't know, modify something, for example, for Asian countries and so on. But still, for that, we have to have the resources. To have the resources, you have to earn money. To earn money, you have to create a good game, a great game for the main market in mobile industry, and this is USA. So for me, it's a common sense, just launch the game in US and trying to get metrics there. But I do understand that, for example, small independent studios or indie studios, maybe for them, not maybe, but for them, it will be really very expensive. And of course, in that case, you can try to launch a game on another, but maybe Mexico is also quite good, because I think that we saw the same behavior between players in US and in Mexico. So I mean that you can find the way, but if you have resources, if you have enough marketing budget, I suggest to launch on US. And do not worry about golden cohort, because, well.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. And I think what's best about it is that when you start a soft launch, and mm-hmm. the game should be in a position where, as you said, it's not making you look bad, but let's put it this way. The game should be in a position where you truly believe in it. It's very deliberate. Mm-hmm. You've gotten into a position where it is ready to go to a market. Maybe it doesn't have quite as much content to start scaling, but it is ready. And when you put that game out on, like, you know, the typical, let's say Zynga had the strategy, I don't know if they still have, but the Philippines for a tech launch, and then the mm-hmm. tier 2 markets of of maybe English speaking or non, like usually non English speaking, like the Netherlands, the Scandinavia, and some kind of like a countries that could spend but don't speak English. Let's see how it works. And then you're starting to creep on tier ones, the New Zealands, the Australias, the Canadas, and then finally you are ready and you put it out in the US. That's a lot of benchmarking. And it's very weird for the team to, you know, sort of start the soft launch and end up in a country that tends to have very poor KPIs. And so, like, what are you getting out of that? It's like, yeah, it's like you're extrapolating, is this really a good game or not? Like, it's hard to say, are we bad because we're in a market that is not good? Or are we bad because our game is bad? And like, we don't know.
I want to mention that even if you feel that you've done everything correctly and that you press all of the necessary buttons and so on and so on, sometimes magic just doesn't happen, because I still believe that games are entertainment, and there should be some kind of soul and heart in it. It's not only business projects. So if there is no this, I know the catchers for your audience, it will be not okay for them. So they will not play your game, even if you do everything like for using all of the successful schemes from another games. So it's still like, you know, this mix of magic and business, and it's really very hard.
Yeah, tell me about it. So talking about like switching tiers and talking about like War Robust Frontiers. So very, very, very different, like in all ways different game than Little Big Robots. It's PC, console, super realistic, very hardcore looking game. I mean, you need a gaming machine to play this. How did this game came to be? And looking at the timelines, they were developed at the same time. So part of your team is developing this cute little robot shooting multiplayer game. And the other part is like, yeah, that's all cool, but we're going to make this AAA quality.
But we want
quality.
Another one.
Yeah, AAA quality, crazy, you know, explode. You have absolutely a different type of a skill set and look and audience playing the other one. It's like, how was that game? You know, like,
how did this happen?
Yeah, how did this happen?
How did this happen, guys?
Yeah, it's like two different companies are making. Like, I would not say that these are even coming from the same company. They're so different of a product.
Partially, you are right, because we are developing War Robot Frontiers together with another in-house development team of my games. And this team actually develops a lot of PC and console games. So they are great professionals. So they have their experience and their expertise. And we have our War Robot universe, let's call it this way. And we have a lot of data from War Robot Mobile about audience, about what this audience likes and so on and so on. So we decided to unite it. Our resources. So if I may say so, like co-team, co-production, something like that. So co-development, yes, it's not only our game. And you're absolutely right that, maybe I can say so, that a younger part of our team were like, oh, yes, we want to do Little Big Robots because it's fun and so on. And maybe... people who are a bit older, they're like, oh no, we want to be these guys who are playing on PC with super realistic robots which are fighting with each other. And this is really very cool that we have this freedom trying to do what we really want in what we believe. So yeah, we work closely together. So it's like two teams which are developing this game. Yeah. And it's also about like widening our audience, because in my dream I see all of these things like, I don't know, for small children we have happy meals in McDonald's with the small robots and the children playing top down, and then their fathers and mothers, big children, yes, young adults and they're playing this PC version of Warbot Frontiers and something like that. And then we still have our core audience, which say like, oh, we were there first, and they continue playing on their phones.
So kind of going back to the original question of building a franchise. So it sounds like it was very organic. It's like people are developing War Robots and they're putting their way forward. I think War Robots is kind of like our generation's mech warrior. So going back, like another, you know, classic franchise in terms of fighting war robots, but, but starting a franchise, like do you, like, how do you start it? Is there like a decision to be made? Like, no, now we're going to focus on robots and going to bring them on all the platforms. I'm going to think of the audience, and we have to build a cohesive narrative around which, you know, the war robot universe, like the Marvel universe, like everything is happening here. This is the timeline for this. This is the timeline for that. Is that the type of a thing, how you start a franchise, or is it more like organic, like your game development, where people just have ideas?
Yeah, I'm an honest person. So, yeah, I would say that actually it was organic. And I think that is because when you're talking about like Marvel universe, it's been on market, I don't know exactly how many decades. And I'm pretty sure that at the very beginning, they were not thinking about how big they would be in the future. And so I think that they start, I hope that it is true, some kind of like organically. So, and when we are talking about actually mobile games, like an industry, and when it starts, it was, we were not thinking at that time that actually in 10 years, it will be billions of dollars. So it was like, it was also fun. Okay, let's do something and launch into the store. So for us, it was the same. First of all, it was War Robots, and it was a huge success. Then we're like, okay, maybe it was even, you know, someone was already tired of War Robots Mobile, and maybe this person just decided, guys, I'm full of these mobile versions and builds. I want to create a big game. Let's try and think about it. So yeah, for us, it's more like organic way of building this franchise. And we're still at the very beginning, because a lot of things we have to think of. And but still, at the same time, we have our trailers, which are telling our audience the story of War Robots universe. What was happening? What will happen next? How all of these things happen in the past, and what was the reason for that? I want to make a spoiler for our listeners that next year it will be 10 years anniversary for War Robot Mobile, and actually we are already planning a lot of activities which are connected exactly with the story, with the history. And actually this is our way of building the franchise, that when, you know, we are getting not older, I do not want to use, we are getting mature. Yeah, mature. because of that, we understand that, okay, so on that day of our anniversary, we'll do something really big and really great. And not only from the community side, but also from the product. And we, as I said, we work really very closely. And we just, and this is this way when we are on the meeting call and like, okay, let's brainstorm how we can entertain our audience, what we want to tell them, how we will represent this in the game, how we will represent it in our social media, what will marketing team do, what about re-engagement campaigns, and so on and so on. And sorry, I'm already talking about marketing, that's myself, but I mean that, but then I was not joking when I was telling you about this McDonald's Happy Meal, because I think this is a franchise. Then you have to reach to your audience through every channel you have, not only from performance marketing, but also from some offline activities. But for that, we have to have a good games. And I mean that we're still at the very beginning. And when we see, I do not want to use if, but when we see the good results, I think we will be ready to our next stage, like, okay, let's buy, I don't know, some a video on Super Bowl between matches, so something like that.
Well, that's usually a sound. That's a sign of decline whenever some game company buys an ad on Super Bowl.
Yes,
that's historically been not the.
Okay, let's imagine something yeah, another.
I get it. Like something big, something really cool. Yeah. So now I assume you have some kind of a brand management function that focuses on building the story of the franchise.
Yes, we have this franchise team, and it's actually mostly like a central service in my games. And just because we're working closely, because they always can ask us about, for example, oh, do you have some insights about your audience regarding this or that? And we say, okay, we can actually launch the survey in our inbox and we can ask our players. So yeah, we're working really very closely.
Yes, yeah. And especially working with different types of partners, whether they're the McDonald's or the Hasbros of the world, what they're looking for is longevity and the future plan. And you have now the longevity and you're working actively on making the future plans happen. So so that of course opens up to the franchise teams. I've visited big studios and they have their small franchise teams with the toys and the t-shirts and all kinds of cool stuff.
And we actually, we were like trying this thing because I think maybe it was 2 years ago when we launched our branded t-shirts on, I think it was Amazon, with our robots for our actually players. They can buy them. It was not very successful, but still for us, it was just, first step, like, what can we do? What will be the reaction? Where we fail? And what we learn from this? And how we can develop it into our future activities? So yeah, we're trying.
Yeah, makes all the sense. I have last question. So, if you would do this all over again, would you still approach it in a very organic way where you see how things are developing and kind of, the games are coming organically for organic ways of audience? Like, yeah, that makes sense. And this makes sense. And now we should kind of start bringing it together through franchise teams and so forth. Or would you, seeing the success and the longevity of the first product, be like, okay, let's be strategic, let's build around a strategy, let's build a franchise and focus on, strategically thinking about different audiences and how you're going to go and have that mindset of it will be a toy line, it will be an animation, it could be a feature film at one point, it could be a Netflix show and this type of stuff, and this is how we're going to expand the audience, or would you still kind of, go organically through it, kind of like almost like a live game development?
Well, it's a tricky question, Mishka. And still, we're thinking that War Robots are really very good for Netflix cartoon or something like this. And, a lot of our team members, they're just like asking us when we will do something like this. Well, of course, I think it would be more logically if you have all of the plans and strategic vision. But still, I will sound okay a bit tricky. But I mean that for me, the best way will be if it is a mix. When we see that something is appearing, it is really very good to start the strategic vision at the very beginning. But as I say, for example, for War Robots Mobile, when it's only started back to 2014, I'm not sure that anyone there was thinking about Netflix show. So yeah, I don't think that it could be only strategic vision. Because still, as I said, games are entertainment, games are art, and there should be not only business goals. There should be some kind of your inside feelings, your love, your passion. And it's very difficult to create something something using only your strategic vision if you do not feel this passion. So yeah, I think it should be mixed.
Yeah, I agree with the mix. I'm just saying, I'm kind of like looking at the history of games, and I don't think, has anybody done it better than Rovio in the sense that they had, you know, the first game and games, and they really focused on building an IP and achieved that, you know, motion picture level with the toy lines, with the animations, and so forth, compared to, you know, bigger games, let's say Subway Surfers, Clash of Clans, Candy Crush. Like, they never, they haven't, like, even though Clash of Clans has had two games and the animation's kind of like rolls towards it, it I don't feel like it's the same type of a phenomenon, maybe. And Candy Crush definitely couldn't expand outside the one of the best mobile games ever. So that's not a bad thing there, but it's not like a transmedia
I know. Well, I have an explanation for myself about that, because, well, actually, when we are talking about, for example, PC or video console games, and this industry is much older than mobile industry, and actually what they have and had in the past, they were developing, they were, and they had to create this brand from the very beginning, because this brand should be at the very end when the game is launched and when you have to sell it. So for them, building the brand, for example, thinking about the franchise was also very organic. It was their way of operating. And when we are talking about mobile games, we were infected by this performance marketing thing, because you actually just run the campaign, especially at the very beginning in 2014, 15, and so on. And you just see the result right away. You were not, we were not thinking about creating the brand. We were maybe that time we were thinking that this performance marketing golden era will continue endlessly, but it's not. And maybe now for us, like mobile games developers, is the time to start thinking about brand actually. And just because, for example, I was working also with PC games back then, I do understand this kind of thing, and I'm pretty happy that now in mobile games we're also thinking about it. But still, even I, who had this experience, for me, it's sometimes really very difficult to start thinking about, I don't know, some branding campaign, because it's not like performance marketing. So I think that this is the distinction between big games and, I mean, PC console games and mobile games, because they will see the result only after the launch of the product, when they went to the stores and when people will start buying it. And before that, they have to create this strong desire to have this game.
And I fully understand, like, it when it comes to it, that you don't want to focus too much on the brand when you don't have a successful product. Like, you have to have a successful product first. But I'm just wondering that when you have a successful product, and we mean a product that can easily sustain 10 years, like we can see it, this is sustainable. At what point do you really should start thinking about, hey, this can be a franchise? Because I kind of feel like with the many games that we have, many successful mobile games, they kind of go to, like, you know, 3 years, it's going great, 4, 5, 6, it's like, hey, we should do something. 7, they start doing something, and then it's kind of like hits that decline phase. And it's like 9, and now we have the, you know, now we can do something. And it's like too late, or not too late, but you kind of missed the peak when it was.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. Well, we never know what was the best timing, or maybe the best timing is still in the future. But I think that for us, it was this, well, I think that maybe 3-4 years ago, we were start thinking about, okay, this is quite serious. Let's try to do something, and still we have, you know, when you are working only on one project, you're really getting bored, and that's why you're trying to find the way of entertain yourself. And you know, there are these people who just, I don't know, meet on Friday after the work and like, okay, I have this concept, we can code it like easy peasy in 1 minute, okay, here is the bill, let's do something. So, I mean, it's still, of course, the main thing, I think, that when you have this good game and mature game, and do not be, how to say this correctly, do not be sure that it will continue for the next decades, because actually, as you can see, things change very quickly. So you have to always think about business and about your point of growth and how you can develop what you already have and what is already very strong and very good. And I think this is the moment when you are like, okay, I heard that you had some concept. Maybe we can combine it.
I understand. It is like, I understand the realities of a game team that is focusing on shipping the next update and the marketing team that is focusing on the next optimized creative, the next hero creative that they have to find, the next growth channel they have to tap into. And if somebody would come in like, guys, what are we doing? These are gigantic robots that are walking and shooting. Like, like, let's not talk about, like, sure, let's do this, but maybe instead of talking about like how do we make the next game and so forth, in addition, like we can talk about that, but how about we take this as a brand and really create a platform from which we can spawn several brands on different platforms as a different interactive media. See, this is just me like crazy talking. This is how I would approach, like let's think gigantic.
I think that you are also right, and I'm pretty sure that maybe there was some conversations like you just said, because maybe I was not just in presence of this one, but we are thinking inside, in my games, we are thinking about brand. And actually it's, it's a topic for another discussion about brand performance and how we want to create this brand and how we want to gain the audience. So yeah, I want to underline that when we are talking, when I say organically, it's not just, some chaotic behavior like, oh, let's do something. We are always, there are people who are like visionaries, and we have people in our team who have this strong strategic vision and who are very good in numbers. And when we are working together, then we get already, like this War Robots Mobile. And I hope that this will help us to continue building our franchise. But still, as I said, we're at the very beginning. But Marvel, let's see what we'll do next decade.
But I totally understand. I was just trying to to gouge, like, when is the balance? When you do have a hit, do you just continue developing?
Or at the very beginning. It's always, this question, what was the first egg or chicken? So
yeah, well, no, not even that. It's like, when do you start? When you do already have a hit, like I 100% agree that focus on a game 100%. But when you do have a hit, at what point do you go into, hey, this could be a franchise instead of, not instead, in addition to being a hit game?
Just one hit game, yeah.
Exactly. And then the franchise doesn't mean that you have the sequel coming in, but it could be sequel and the McDonald's and the toy line and like everything like that. Like we can now go to multiple different directions because we have such a engaged, sticky audience that we understand that we can market to and so forth. So, just dreaming big.
Well, yeah. And